The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Hello, welcome back to We the People. We're uncharacteristically...
on time.
In our chairs.
Whoops, hold on. On time.
Except for Bill's microphone's pointed at the sky. Bob?
Yeah, good afternoon, Aaron and
so,
Bill.
So Bob just confessed that he's all sleepy. Love that. love
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah, just give him up right off the bat.
He said he's taking your medication. Hey, I had to take some medication as an experiment. It wasn't the kind of experiment you're thinking either. And it made me forget everybody's name. So, you know, you should be happy you're just sleeping. Because there's worse out there.
Well, you know, we don't know the outcome of this experiment yet.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, that's true.
So it's an on-air experiment.
Bill, what kind of drugs are you taking?
Not currently. However, you know, in my college years, I was into full-blown medical research.
There you go.
Yeah.
And
what was your name again?
I'm on a caffeine life high right now.
I was going to say, Bill's going directly for the coffee. So, welcome to We the People. We are chatting and streaming live, of course, at wethepeopleradio.us. If you are listening to this in Philadelphia, actually, you're going to hear it just in time because we've got big doings this week on Wednesday, April 22nd.
Yep.
The Oakland Veterans Administration and
Philadelphia.
Yeah, how odd is that? The two places that we air on the radio are both in a congressional hearing.
It's you.
Getting grilled on VA matters. Yes, the stars have all aligned, and so now they're all getting in trouble. Yay. So let's see. WeThePeopleRadio.us is the fastest place for you to get information on the programs. Great place for all the archives, too. Super good for all the archives. And then when I find out where that hearing's going to be, if it's going to be on, everybody keeps calling
it'll
it ESPN.
No,
I know it's C-SPAN.
I think every area,
but there's like a zillion of them.
Your cable network will have it on a different
channel.
Yeah,
well, I couldn't possibly know what channel, but it's ESPN1, ESPN2, ESPN Plain.
Yeah, because they do have, a lot of people don't realize it, but ESPN, now you got me saying it.
I know.
C-SPAN has your state government on one channel, and then it has a C-SPAN for federal.
And then sometimes the Senate's on one. Sometimes this is a House committee. So this will be Jeff Miller, the chair of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. And it should be at 10:30 Eastern time, Wednesday, April 22nd. So the good part of that is that we have Miss Rusty Ann Brown, who has been on this program with us before. And we've talked about this issue of the hiding of the claims. I know lots of you are focused because the media has been focused on the healthcare side. And that's all about, you know, people can't get into doctors, or there's, you know, some sort of screw up that happens when they get in there, or, you know, all that kind of stuff. And that's all absolutely still real. This is before that. This would be the benefits side. So in order for people to get that medical care, they've got to wind their way through the benefits administration. And it's a slow one. Very slow. And that's what you hear about with them mostly, is the backlog. This is a self-inflicted wound, however. Because in Oakland anyway, I can't speak to the Philadelphia thing, but the numbers are massive. And, you know, when I get home, I should have thought of this before, but when I get home, I will post, there were a couple of articles in the last week or two. I posted them on Facebook, but I'm going to move them to our website so people can access those. But, the gist of it is they had what they call informal claims, and those are basically just requests for benefits. Dear Veterans Administration,
yeah,
I'm a veteran of the Army.
Letter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
I broke my leg
when I was in there, and now I have bad arthritis or whatever, and, you know, need some help. And the Veterans Administration is mandated by law to respond to that veteran and help them get a claim going.
And a lot of cases, that's their first contact with VA.
Right.
All I got to do is write them a letter, and I can get my stuff started.
Sure. And they don't know that there's maybe a county service office in their area, or there's some other way to get benefits at all. So anyway, the VA in Oakland the administration in Oakland for a long time, like 1990-ish, early 1990-ish. Going forward, they would gather up those kinds of claims, those informal claims, put them in folders by month and by year, and put them in a cabinet. And Rusty and a few of her coworkers were asked partway through their training on how to process claims. They were brought there to work on it as a special project. They only worked on it for 6 months, though, before the powers that be. That was back in the days when Douglas Bragg was the director of the Oakland.
Good old Dougie boy.
Good old Douglas Bragg. We've talked about him quite a bit in the past. So he basically shut down the project. And all those 13,000 claims didn't get done. Last year, finally, at the behest of Congressman LaMalfa's office, the inspector general went in there and discovered that, yes, indeed, they did have 13,000 claims that went unprocessed for a period of time, but they had such bad record keeping, they didn't have a list, they couldn't figure out where they went or how it worked or any of that good stuff, which defies logic. Then the undersecretary, Allison Hickey, she went into a hearing with Chairman Miller here. Actually, it was a subcommittee, so he wasn't there. It was a few weeks ago, and maybe a month, and she said it was 13,000 pieces of paper. That was all. Just 13,000 pieces of paper.
No big deal. No. They just kept them because
they were copies.
They needed paper laying around.
Don't let them see here, move
along. Somebody ran out of
stuff
to do, they could file.
Exactly. And they said that they had already processed them twice. She said they went through them twice. Well, how could they have gone through them twice if there was no list? See, the list is a biggie. So, the person that you're looking for, we should give you a little playbook. The person you're looking for at the hearing is Rusty Ann Brown. She was a Navy corpsman from 1979 to 1989, honorably discharged.
Did she say corpse?
Yeah, she did legally stuff. They're like paralegals or something, whatever they do. So hired as a claims assistant, analyzed claim information sent by veterans to establish claims and submit evidence for ongoing claim. So that's what she did as a claims assistant. She was a veteran service representative there at the Oakland office in 2013, and that was the training that she was working on when all these claims came up and all that. In April of 2014, a cart showed up in her work area. You can see that in the Inspector General report. She pulled a folder and saw her initials and date of November 2012, so it was one of those old informal claims from the project. So it still never got done. She had little notes she made way back in the day.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyway, she...
In spite of what they were saying, it was still
languishing
in a closet.
Yeah. It was actually rolling around in a cart.
Sweet.
Now. So...
So if I'm that vet, I'm still...
Oh, you're nowhere.
Yeah.
And many of these people had passed away. But, of course, they said...
They never said that, though.
They said nobody did.
Nobody did.
Nobody did. But I think you're going to hear in the hearing that a lot of people did. She took early retirement September of 2014, just basically due to a really hostile work environment. And, you know, if you think that stepping up and doing the right thing is easy, I think most people know it isn't. However, when you're being abused by different agencies, it's like, why doesn't anybody speak up? Well, it's not particularly pleasant for you.
No.
I mean, it doesn't go well.
No, the whole whistleblower thing... Even though they're not supposed to retaliate against whistleblowers, they'll find a reason. At least on the federal side, they seem to be able to find a reason, these bureaucrats, to let you go. Even if you were an exemplary employee, all of a sudden, you went rotten.
Well, and you get ostracized, and your coworkers are afraid to talk to you because they're going to be seen as part of the, you know, you're a rat. There have actually been people publicly who have said that she's just doing it for her own benefit.
Oh, and what benefit would that be?
I know.
Did she get a big paycheck because of that?
Yeah. No, she only went on CBS and told the story because she just wanted the accolades.
Yeah.
And, like, losing her job.
They probably paid her a whole bunch of money to go on TV and tell a story, right? Because that's what journalists do.
Yeah, no. But now she had to buy herself an airplane ticket so she can go back to...
Yeah, that's on her, too.
...testify at the committee. So here's, like, a little background. This was one of the backgrounds for the folks that are going to be quizzing the witnesses. Discovery of 13,184 initial veteran benefit claims in a file cabinet at Oakland VA Regional dating back to the mid-1990s is an egregious example of mismanagement and incompetence. Veterans who state their desire to apply for benefits are supposed to receive a formal application from VA. They don't have to fill it out for them. We should point that out. I mean, if they sent somebody a claim for benefits and the person doesn't respond, well, then that's kind of how it goes. They don't have to respond. So let's see. Why don't you tell me who the cast of characters is, because I've got to type. I can't type and hold paper at the same time.
Well, we got Diana Rubens.
Diana Rubens. Yep. Diana Rubens was the lady who came from the Washington, D.C. office. She worked for the undersecretary back in 2012. She came out to Oakland, and somebody pointed those claims out. She looked at them and realized that some of them indeed needed to be processed.
And now she's the undersecretary of field operations. What's that?
She was. Now, get this. She's in Philadelphia.
Oh, she got promoted.
She actually got demoted.
Oh, demoted.
Yeah. Yeah. Your career track with these guys goes up and down and sideways, and then you disappear for a while and you pop up like toast out of a toaster from some other location. It's really quite something.
Wow. So she got recycled into Philadelphia as another field manager?
I don't know what she's doing. I think she might be the director of that. It's hard for me to know.
And so she'll be testifying.
We'll find out Wednesday.
She'll be testifying on the 13,000 claims, how they all got processed, and
nobody waited,
nobody died, everything was done right. There was a few training errors, I understand.
Well, she set up the team that that Rusty was on. So she was the upper level supervisor of Rusty's team.
And then didn't like what she was doing, or
I don't know if she just wandered off, or I'm not. I honestly don't know. We're gonna find out.
Okay.
Okay, who's the next one?
Let's see. The next one, Michelle Kwok.
Michelle Kwok is the assistant director at this point in time. And
In Oakland.
In Oakland, sorry. Yeah. Yep, she's an Oakland character.
And so she's the big cheese in Oakland right now?
Nope, she's not the director. She's the assistant director.
Okay.
She, however, when these claims were discovered, was out on maternity leave in 2012 when Diana Rubens showed up and found all those claims.
So she has intimate knowledge of...
Well, she was out on maternity leave. Guess who was filling in for her as the assistant director?
Oh, tell me.
Juliana Bohr, the lady who's the current director.
Oh, okay. Her boss.
Yeah. Right now, her boss.
Yeah. So back then, she...
She went to fill in because Juliana Bohr, the current director of the Oakland facility, was in Seattle.
So she's going to testify. She knew nothing about any of this back then.
Yeah. She told the congressman that's looking into this to his face, actually, that she knew nothing about it. She worked in Seattle.
So what was she doing there when she was filling in? Rearranging the files and...
Yeah, so that's going to be a different conversation this time when Mr. LaMalfa gets to ask her
pointed.
By the way, yeah. I hear you were actually there. You were filling in on maternity leave,
and you forgot to tell me that time.
Who else do we have?
Okay, we got Michelle Kwok.
Yeah, we got Michelle Kwok, and Michelle Kwok, she would have been involved in all this for all this time, and actually, she was sitting at the table when the congressman asked if she knew about the 14,000 claims, and she just didn't say anything. She didn't lie. She just didn't say anything.
Danny Pummel?
Yeah, that guy's the, what's it say, is he's the...
Deputy Undersecretary for Benefits.
That's right, because Allison Hickey is the undersecretary, but she's out of the country.
And you got to have a playbook on this, don't you?
Exactly. That's why we're doing this.
Set this stuff up so that, you know, you can't really tell who's who and who's responsible, and it was his job. No, it was her job. No.
Well, Allison Hickey, the reason she, besides the fact she's the undersecretary for benefits, the reason she's a pivotal character is she's the one who went into the hearing here not too long ago and said that it was just 13,000 pieces of paper. So.
And they did look into all 13,000 pieces.
Twice. Yeah.
And what'd they find?
Yeah, they were all done.
What
they did find, and it was 400 and some odd claims, exactly that many, actually, she said. And they found they could up their benefits. Yeah. They went back.
Oh, that was nice of them. Even though they may not have been due, they went ahead and upped them anyway, just kind of a, we're sorry. That sounds like them.
Yeah. Just a little accident
there. Just give a little extra money out because, you know, they made a mistake.
Well, and then we've got, okay, so Juliana Bohr, who's the current director, and then we have Rusty. And those are the, there'll be two different panels. You'll see a panel from VA management, and so that'll be where the undersecretary's second, mm-hmm. Danny, what's his face?
Hummel.
Interestingly enough, the guess where the secretary of the VA is going to be this Wednesday?
Venezuela?
Nope. April 22nd, the secretary for the VA is going to be in?
Philadelphia.
Oakland, California.
Oh, it's even better.
Going to be in Oakland, California visiting the center there.
Now they're going to, he's just going to be there just to make sure they've got everything straightened up.
They're going to just rally the troops. Talk about what a great job they're doing.
They've done a great job, and it looks so much better now. I don't see any file cabinets rolling around with stacks of paper. And
interesting things to look for will be, let's see, when they give their claim statistics on these different locations, very interesting to note that if, in fact, they have brokered claims out, and those of you who have filed claims and heard that your claim got brokered.
Now, what's that mean?
That means they went to a center that didn't have that much work. You know, your place was overrun, so you boxed up some stuff and sent it to them. Even though those veterans technically are being served out of your location, so Oakland, for instance, if they send it to their satellite office in Sacramento, like say they sent 25 or 26 boxes.
So it's still within the same district. It's just a
It doesn't
satellite.
Count against them, though. It's not part of their backlog.
Their numbers. Are they still getting bonuses?
We don't even know what's going on with the bonus thing. We haven't even gotten that far. Mm. We're just trying to stop playing Secret Squirrel with the claims.
Right.
So, Rusty Brown will be following second on the panel. The other folks are from Philadelphia, so she'll be the only Oakland person there.
Now, what's happened to the 13,000 claims once they've gone through them and verified that, you know, nobody waited, nobody died, everybody got paid?
Except they can't produce the list. They could not produce that
list. They don't have a list. Can they produce the claims?
No, they can't produce it. They were unable to do that last year when the inspector general was in.
And why is that? They just couldn't find
them? Bad record keeping.
Oh, bad record. And so they've still not been able to find the claims. So there's really no way to verify
that. The rumor on the street is that a woman in Reno who used to be the supervisor of that project, her name's Rashetta Smith.
Oh, another name. You dropped a name.
Ms. Smith is in Reno.
Uh-huh.
And she would be the service center manager there.
And tell me she's got a list.
Yeah, rumor is she had the list.
Copy of the list.
Heard from an employee last week that she gave them the list in Oakland, and that's what they're going through right now.
So once they go through these 13,000 pieces of paper, what are they going to do with them?
Well, they should
be. Do they file them or do they?
Well, they should be processing them, and they should be processing them with the correct date.
Right.
Which means it might be mid-90s. I mean, these people are owed significant back pay.
But will they be able to produce them if asked? If somebody said, hey, I'd like to see those 13,000 claims that have been touched, every one of them, and verify the names on those claims to make sure that they've all been. Will they be able to produce those?
No clue. That is why there is a hearing.
Oh, boy.
I know. This is one of those stories where you go, okay, take a really deep breath because you're going to want to.
Of course, I see the Secret Squirrel thing going back and forth. Yep. Well, that wasn't my job description at the time. That was somebody else's job. And, that'll be fun to see their pants get pulled down in front of everybody.
It always goes back to that, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Bill. So I will I'll post a little playbook, and if I know which C-SPAN it's on, but I do know April 22nd, 10:30 a.m. Eastern time is when you should watch for Philadelphia and Oakland Veterans Benefits Administrations to be on the hot seat with Chairman Jeff Miller at the House Veterans Affairs Committee.
What's the date again?
April 22nd.
That's this Wednesday.
That is this Wednesday. And if you're listening to this after this Wednesday on, say, an archive, for instance, I will post a link to that on the website, and or you can go to C-SPAN or Chairman Miller's House Committee page, and I'm sure it'll be on there. I think it's going to be very illuminating. So let's see. We better take a really break.
Once you know the cast of characters, you can kind of write it down, and because you're going to have to write it down just to keep track of who's who at the zoo, and let's see if anything happens. That's the big question.
We'll see once you know that the director isn't really new because she's going to say, I just got here. It's not my fault.
Has anybody to date lost their jobs over this?
Nah. Well, did hear that there is somebody who was told that if they don't resign by next Wednesday, this Wednesday. Funny, everything's happening on
Wednesday.
Oh, Wednesday.
So they won't be available for comment.
Correct. If they don't resign by Wednesday, they're getting fired. So the games have begun.
Yeah.
All right.
Turn up the heat.
You are listening to We the People Radio. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. And don't do anything bad out there, or we'll come after you. and we'll tell everyone. Because that's our answer to everything is we're going to tell everyone.
Tighten that belt because your pants are coming down.
That's Bill's department.
Well, that sounded bad.
It did, too.
Yeah.
Would you like to hum a few bars, Bob, or should I? Okay, we're back. Apparently my humming's better than I thought. There you go. That's
apparently
the spirit.
Music is on 7-second delay today.
I thought it was the medication you were taking. Did you give some to the computer? I hate when that happens.
No, I need to give the computer a swift kick.
Oh, my goodness. All right. So with that unceremonious beginning, we're being joined now by David Williams, president of Taxpayers Protection Alliance. He's going to talk to us about how taxpayers around the country actually are being burned by rooftop solar companies that are cashing in on government handouts. Mr. Williams?
Yes.
So, you know, it's funny because Bill and I just had this conversation with my brother-in-law. And he thinks solar's great.
Well, he's convinced that the whole lease your rooftop, it's just all you're doing is leasing your rooftop and you're getting a reduced rate. How could that be bad?
Well, yeah, solar energy is not particularly bad. It's when taxpayers are being used to subsidize it. That's where the Taxpayers Protection Alliance, that's where we kind of get into the story and have a bit of a problem with it. And we did a report that shows that there's about $39 billion a year that the government spends, of course, of our money, for loans, grants, tax credits, tax handouts to the solar industry. So we're concerned of the subsidizing of the industry and not really of solar power in particular. I mean, it really hasn't matured yet to be a viable alternate form of energy. I mean, right now it's less than 1% of all electricity generated in the country is from solar. So we're not quite there yet.
Well, I'm hearing, too, that solar is still much more expensive to produce energy that way than natural gas, say.
It is, and it's really the extraction of the solar because, you know, there's people that will say, well, solar is free. The sun is free. It doesn't cost anything. But you have to have the technology to turn that sunshine into electricity. And that costs a lot of money. It costs a lot of research and development. You know, look at the Solyndra example of a number of years ago where they took $500 million to produce solar panels. Well, that money just went bye-bye. I mean, they wasted all that money, and they the taxpayers were on the hook for that. And I have to tell you, it's a pretty decent accomplishment to take $500 million and not do anything with it. I mean, you would think that almost any business person in this country could take $500 million and at least produce something.
Okay, so I'm a homeowner.
Yeah.
And I get contacted by SolarCity, and they say, hey, we can reduce your electric bill by half or whatever the number is.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I say no to that?
Because there's the rest of the story. It costs money to buy the panels, if you can buy them. A lot of the companies will lease the panels to you, so you actually don't own the panels. You just lease them.
Okay, but what's their program? Why is that such a bad deal for the homeowner?
Because SolarCity, they will get the tax credit. The homeowner will not get the tax credit because SolarCity, or whatever company, they retain the ownership of the panels, so they retain the ownership of the tax credit.
Okay, so my bill just went from $500 a month to $200 a month. Why do I care about a tax credit?
Because you're paying $150 a month to lease the panels.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, all right.
And if I remember right, I got tangled in this. I told Steve we would get more information and get back to him because I could not remember for the life of me. When you do this lease, when you go to sell your house, you're still stuck with the lease, right?
Absolutely.
Isn't there a trick to this?
Now, how do you get out of that? I mean, can you? Does the buyer of the home automatically qualify to assume that lease, and do they assume it at the buyout rate, or do they have to start all over again?
That's a great question, because these leases are relatively new, probably the last 2 or 3 years where we've seen such a large proliferation of these leases, and we're literally starting to hear from homeowners that are having difficulty selling their houses with these panels because the next homeowner doesn't want to buy a house with leased panels. And so there's this leased product on top of the roof that the next homeowner's like, well, I don't want these. Well, tough luck. They're on top of the house. So either you buy the house or you don't. So homeowners are really finding themselves to be in a bit of a jam here.
Okay. And see, so, it gets back to the same question, though. Why wouldn't he want to assume that lease? Because that's what he kept throwing in my face is, why wouldn't you just assume it if you can keep your power bill from... We had a house out in the country, and our power bill in the summertime was
$750
pushing, yeah, $700-$800 a month.
Evil.
Yeah.
If I could put solar panels, lease solar panels on my roof, and drop that down to say an even 12-month $200 a month or whatever, why is that a bad deal?
Well, some people just don't want solar power. Some people would prefer not to have it. Plus, once you drill into somebody's roof, I mean, it's a lot different than leasing a car, because a car doesn't really do any damage to your house. But you talk to any home builder, any construction guy, and you say, once you drill into someone's roof, no matter how professional the installation is, you're still compromising the integrity of that roof. And at some point, the panels will have to be replaced because solar panels don't last forever.
What is the lifespan on a What is the lifespan on a panel nowadays?
It's probably 15 to 20 years.
Okay. So if I'm selling my house and for whatever reason the homeowner doesn't want panels on the roof, he loves the house but he doesn't want to go into a lease. He just wants a nice clean rooftop. What's the ramifications for the seller? What does he have to do at that point?
Well, unfortunately for the seller, what's going to happen is the prospective buyer is just going to go find another house that doesn't have the panels.
Well, can I buy the panels and get out of it? Can I get out of that lease at that point so I can sell that home to Joe who loves my house? I mean, what's it going to?
It's a lease.
Is it like a prorated deal where
some big buyout?
You have to have a big hunk of money to buy them?
Yeah, there's going to be a buyout that you'll have to do with the lease with the panels before you can get out of that contract. And the question now is, will they uninstall the panels, or will the panels just sit on top of your roof? So there's a lot of unknowns in this. And as I said, I think we're going to see this the next 5 to 10, 15 years when people they bought these panels go and try to sell their houses, and hopefully these companies will still be around in 5, 10, or 15 years.
Oh, yeah, there's that.
Yeah, because actually you're not leasing it from the company. You're leasing it from a bank or some kind of a financial institution, correct?
Well, in some cases, the companies are starting their own leasing companies because they want to get double dip with the profits. So it really is a mess that people get into this, I think, for the best reasons ever, is they want to help the environment. They're trying to do something positive, but they don't look at the long-term ramifications. We spoke with I spoke with a woman in Arizona, in Phoenix, and she tracked her monthly electric bill, and she did all the research on the panels, and she said, okay, I'm going to get these panels. And she saved, I think she told me, $300 a year in electricity, and the panels cost her $800 a year. And so, I mean, obviously, you know, she was paying $500 a year more at the end of the day.
Yeah, whoever helped her do her math was...
A salesman.
An idiot? Oh, sorry. I apologize to salesmen everywhere.
Hey, wait a minute, I'm a salesman.
I know. Well, okay, we better take a really quick break. But when we come back, I'm super curious how much of this is going on, and my guess it's predominantly California, because we We're such idiots. We're always doing something stupid, so it's probably started here. We'll come back. This is We the People Radio. You can join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. We're here with David Williams.
Sunshine came softly through my window today. Could have tripped out GC, but I've changed my way. It'll take time, I know it, but in a while, you're gonna be mine, I know it. We're doing it in style, 'cause I made my mind up, you're going to be mine.
You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. We're here with David Williams, president of the Taxpayers Protection Alliance. All right, so David, lay this out for us. Like, if you're going to make the case that this is a bad place, you got a room full of people who just heard the pitch that it's going to be awesome, save them money, blah, blah, blah. Now you get the opportunity to go in and talk them off the ledge. What would you tell them?
I would say look at the long-term costs of the lease. Look at really the ramifications of putting that on your roof. There's safety concerns. We've heard from firefighters who are concerned about fighting a fire that on a building that has solar panels because the electricity doesn't stop flowing from a panel.
That's right.
Now, a traditional fire, they get their trucks out there. They shut off the power leading up to the house. They can't do that with a solar panel, and I've spoken to firefighters who've said that I will not put my men on top of a roof that has solar panels because I don't want them to get electrocuted. So it's a safety hazard. It could end up costing you, you know, read the fine print. Read the very fine print of these leases to make sure that what you're getting into, you know what you're getting into, that you may be saving money on your electricity bill, but the lease does cost money, and make sure that you can get out of the lease. And, you know, it's buyer beware. And I would say that, you know, solar energy is not necessarily bad. And if you want to do this for cost savings, you may not see the cost savings. But if you're doing this because you want to help the environment and you understand that it will potentially cost you more money, then go for it.
Yeah,
thanks, Bob. Talk to me about the tax rebate. Is that, you know, I hear like 30% tax rebate. Is that every year you get a 30% of what?
It's 30% of the cost of the panels, and that is for the first year, and that gets smaller as the years go on. I think it's really only valid for the first available for the first 5 years. Because at that point it just goes away. But the first-time buyer, that's 30%. That's the federal level. Now states also have rebates. California, I believe, is 30%. Louisiana, 50%. So there are a lot of financial incentives to get these solar panels. And you know, if I could wave a magic wand and change one thing today, it would be that no matter if you own or lease the panel as a homeowner, you get that rebate. You get that tax credit instead of the company that sells you the panel.
Interesting. And then, okay, as a taxpayer, you know, so let's look at it from just the wider angle. So for those of us who are pretty much never getting a solar panel on our roof that we know of, because, I mean, like, we looked into that when we lived in the country, and seriously, we were going to take our entire field, our whole pasture, was going to be from one end to the other. It was going to look like we had some sort of stadium going on back there. Seriously, I thought, gee, our neighbors are going to hate us.
Yeah, they're very attractive.
It was going to run for, I don't know, what was it, 100?
Oh, it was probably about 150 feet long.
Yeah,
by, I don't know, there was a single row, so what are they, 8 feet long or 8 feet wide or something.
And it was like $80,000, but with tax credits, blah, blah, blah. It was like $20,000 at the end of it.
Yeah, it was a little more than that. Yeah. But I guess the thing that kind of bugged me was, there's a tax incentive, but...
You're paying it on both ends if you're a taxpayer.
Yeah, absolutely. And also I heard that if for every solar unit that goes out there and goes online, the power companies have to buy that power back. And as a result of that, they're raising the rates for everybody else. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct, because this is a concept called net metering. And that means if you are a solar power panel owner, you sell your electricity back to the power company. And you sell it back, but you don't pay for the use of that electrical grid. I like to use this example. If you're on a toll road and you pay $2 for a toll, you know, because that money goes towards fixing potholes in the road, making the road run smoother, then all of a sudden you have a bunch of cars that are on the road that aren't paying that toll, that aren't paying for the upkeep. They're doing, using the road for the same purposes, but they're not paying for it. So all the other people that are paying the toll, the toll is going to go up. So it's going to get more expensive for those that don't have solar for the upkeep of the electrical grid. So that's another concern.
Yeah, because the power company's not going to lose money on this deal. I mean, if you figure half the people all of a sudden switch over to solar, where are they going to get their income?
Right. And some people will remain completely off the grid. I mean, those are few and far between, but there are some folks who will not sell their power back and just keep the solar panels. Unfortunately, what happens is at night and a prolonged cloudy period, they need electricity from the grid. So their solar panels aren't 100% reliable. And before the break, you mentioned California and why it's happening in California, why there's this big push for solar panels. I think it's for two reasons. I think you hit on the first reason is the government is devoted to this renewable fuels, trying to get renewable electricity, and solar is one of them. But also, there's a lot of sunshine in California. I don't mean to be flippant or
and
simple.
And we have a corner on the rainbows and the unicorns, too.
That's right. We've got them all.
Just in case you're curious.
But that's why you see this happening in states like Arizona and California, because if it can't work in California or Arizona, it's not going to work in Minnesota or Wisconsin or the Northwest.
No, your return diminishes greatly when you move into areas of
absolutely
cold. Yeah, yeah.
Well, okay, so you have taxpayers all over the place. Their power companies are mandated to buy a percentage of renewable power, even though, we're taking out hydroelectric dams because, of course, that's the cheapest, most efficient renewable resource. So we're taking out dams, but we're mandated to do solar, which is pretty much never going to become self-supporting. So all the taxpayers are forking out for that, while some people get their power lowered because they're getting these panels put on. I mean, at what point do we just pull the plug and go and just stop the madness?
Well, that's a great question, and I think that we need to know whether this industry can stand on its own. And
exactly.
That's why when we look at the 30% tax credit on the federal level, you look at the state incentives, is let's take those away, or let's just make them so small that it's really not a business decision for a company. It's just, we'll find out if these companies can survive on their own without the assistance from taxpayers, because is there enough private investment to keep these businesses going, or are these just is this just a house of cards that are that's waiting to fall?
Yeah. I got a question. If let's say I don't lease my panels, I actually buy them. I take out a loan or whatever, and I pay the guy to come out put solar panels on my roof. I think the sales pitch now is they pay for themselves in 5 to 7 years, and then it's all free power. I mean, you get you get the benefits of owning, and you get the lower rates, blah blah blah. What happens if let's say something goes wrong, there's no more warranty 10 years down the road, and a panel has to be replaced, or maybe a series of panels have to be replaced? Do I get a tax credit on the replacement panels, or is that a one-time deal when you install the system?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it's a one-time deal, but I would also caution about owning the panels because, and I would think if there were a better case scenario, it would be to own the panels outright. But a lot of companies now are setting up financing arms of their companies, so you can, quote, own these panels. But what they do, and this is, again, pretty brilliant if you're shady, is that they have a price inflator in the first year of that loan. So they still get their 30% tax credit, but it's done in increased payments on the panels from the loan that you're getting from this financing company. But I think if you go to a regular bank, they're not going to do that because, you know, it really depends, though, because, you know, if you quote, buy a car and you're paying, you know, a monthly car payment, you technically don't own the car.
No, the bank does. Yeah.
The bank has the title, so the bank may be entitled to the tax credit. So there's a lot of moving parts here.
Are financial institutions, are they kind of, I mean, do they like these panels as a loan item? I mean, do they like to finance them, or is it kind of a risky loan for them?
They have stayed on the sidelines so far, and I'm not sure because if it's risky or it's just not a mature enough sort of industry to start getting into this. But we have not seen a lot of private institutions lending money for panels.
Interesting. All right, we've got to take one more break. Sorry, David, we got behind on our breaks, and
it
all fell on you. So you've got 2 minutes to, you know, find some coffee or whatever it is you're doing where you are. Don't take any medication, though. We did a little survey on that earlier, and it's making people tired, and just stay off the drugs.
Just so you know.
You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Sunshine's free, that's great, but it costs us a dang fortune to capture it. You know, it's kind of like the water. You know, we're billing everybody a gazillion dollars for the water in California, and we're right next to a whole lot of it. If we could figure out how to use that, be efficient. So many things. So I should clear up a comment from earlier. Rusty's job in the Navy, this was before you got here, David, so just play along. Rusty's job in the Navy, we always laugh about her being a corpsman. Kind of an Obama joke thing. So anyway, just sorry about that. We weren't real clear about our Obama joke. And somebody else in the chat room was like, hey, you're an idiot. No. Okay. I know he didn't say that, but it sounds funnier if I say that. So anyway, we are idiots, but we were basically making fun of the president. So now that I'm all clear about that.
Hey, David, I got a question for you.
Back to David Williams and the solar issue.
Yeah, there we go. Let's get back on solar. I noticed that a lot of new home construction now, one of their big selling points is solar, built-in solar on the buildings. That to me would seem like a smart move. I mean, if you're going to buy a house and it's already got solar built in, it's not on the roof, it's in the roof. What do you think about that?
I think that's a step in the right direction because I think that is, and depending on how the financing of those panels, but I'm sure it's built into the construction cost of the house, but I think that would solve part of the problem. Again, as long as they're not subsidized by taxpayers and as long as the homeowners are paying for it. And obviously, when you're looking at a new house, it's hard to miss the panels on top of it. So I think that is a step in the right direction.
Yeah,
because they're starting to build them in like tiles.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know, they're not that
and
obvious.
That's not that big a deal.
Yeah, because they are on the same line as the roof.
Sure.
And yeah, they're a little bit different color than the tiles on the roof.
But I'm with you, David. Boy, you know, we got to pay for them. We've got to subsidize them to improve the technology or develop it or whatever.
Oh, I'll bet you the contractor that puts those panels in that building is getting some kind of a tax rebate for building those into the cost of the home. He's, you know,
green industry.
Yeah, he's not a dummy. He's going to take advantage of that.
He could be double dipping because he could be getting, you know, the tax rebate, but also inflating the cost of the construction of the house to reflect, no pun intended.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and you look at some of these subdivisions that were going in here a while back. I mean, we've got one right around the corner from us. I don't know. There's probably 150 units there. They all have solar panels on the roof. I'm sure if he put an order in for panels for 150 units, that's a sizable solar order. He's gonna get a rebate on that. And like you say, then he's going to build that into the cost of the construction, maybe even double dip.
That's fun. I just don't want to pay to subsidize their power bill.
Yeah, as long as I know what the price is going into it, I don't really care.
I think that is probably the biggest concern that people have is that they want to know the cost. They want to know how much, you know, it's going to save them or cost them at the end of the day. And like I said, I think, you know, whether you're Republican or Democrat or in the middle, you know, we all want to help out the environment, but some of us
I don't know.
Want
I don't,
to help out
I don't
taxpayers.
Really want to do that much anymore.
Yeah. No, I
kind of
reading...
like the environment just the way it is. I'm sick of helping the environment.
Yeah. No, I was reading an article the other day
I'm
that was talking
warming.
About solar panels and wind energy and this one research project they did showed that the solar and wind industry is 34 times more expensive to create power by that means than it is compared to, say, natural gas. And I thought, wow, when you really pencil it out, what are we doing?
Yeah, and you know, and let's remember that natural gas, petroleum, these are fuels. Solar is energy. Wind is energy. There's a big difference between a fuel and a source of energy. And you mentioned global warming a couple of seconds ago.
Yeah, we think it's fake.
You know, whether or not there's climate change, do we really trust the government to be the ones to be able to fix it? I mean, if there
and
were
anything
And
the entire crowd
happening,
said,
I mean,
no.
I mean, they can barely count the number of people in this country every 10 years during the census. And that's a pretty simple process.
There's a lot of things they can't do.
Trusting the government to address climate change if it was happening.
Yeah, no. We're having some climate change here because it got hot here, which is fairly unpleasant. Stupid and sunny now.
Well, too bad.
Yeah, not supposed to be this hot this time of year.
For all those people who've had snow for the last 11 months, we're sorry we're, you know, bitching about our sun. All right, David, thank you so much.
Thanks, David. We really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
We'll do it again.
Yes, absolutely.
Down with Rooftop Solar Leasing. This is We the People Radio. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Hey, welcome back. We the People Radio here. Bill's playing air drums. It ain't pretty. You got air drums made for radio, bud.
Yeah, I didn't go with air guitar and make the face. Come on.
There was a face involved.
I was going to do the Dana Carvey face, you know.
He does the best guitar face.
Oh, yeah.
So you're joining Aaron Ryan, Bill Cundiff, Bob Martin here at We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. And this hour we need to give Mr. Stewart a call. We are revisiting our good friend, Mr. Leighton Stewart. If you have not heard this guy before, you're blowing it.
Yeah, he is
hilarious.
A great guy.
I love him.
Talking about something very uncomfortable, global warming.
Yes. He's kind of a climate denier. Which
you gotta roll your sleeves up for this one.
He's funny. Actually, of note, he was in that, and I had forgotten this, but he was in the movie Blue.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
I totally forgot about that. And I, you know what? I'm off my game. We had a death in the family, so I know that's no excuse, but I've been kind of a bonehead about the website here. I need to add that because was I ahead of myself? Did I do it? No, I didn't do it. Knucklehead. Blue Beats Green is the movie, and he's in the trailer. I'll add the trailer to the page.
Yeah. I was reading.
He's awesome.
Yeah, he is. I was reading an article a couple days ago about the whole green, the green energy failing throughout the world, and a lot of countries are kind of pulling back a little bit. Australia recently pulled their funding from the UN on some green energy program. It was in the millions of dollars. Right on the heels of our illustrious president going over there and trying to rip him for not supporting the UN global warming initiatives. In response, he said, basically, you don't know what you're talking about, and we're pulling our funding from the UN. And Britain now is looking at doing the same thing. It's breaking them. They're just not going to throw any more money at this because it's breaking the bank.
Because it's stupid.
It is stupid. And the U.S., I mean, the agreement we just signed with China, basically says we have to reduce ours by like 25% by 2030. They can continue to increase their CO2 emissions until that time. And then in 2030, they have to level off. Well, we all know that China right now is probably one of the biggest polluters out there, and they're gonna be allowed to increase their production of CO2 until that time while we're cutting back. So really, I mean, are we gonna clean the air up all by ourselves here?
Well, and why would we?
Yeah, it's just the whole premise doesn't hold water to start with, but to level all these taxes and energy BS that they're laying on us.
Why did you say it like that? BS?
Because I'm starting, my blood pressure's going up. I'm
BS,
sorry.
It's really quiet. Like,
I know. BS.
Can I say BS?
Bovine excrement.
That's right. So we're going to have Leighton Stewart on.
Is he
here with us?
He's
going to help us out with this. He's going to bring me off the ledge, and we're going to talk about global warming.
We're going to talk about how
climate change.
I refuse to say that. Plants need CO2. I love that. That's his website, plantsneedco2.org. Also, therightclimatestuff.com. He's got a bunch of different things out there, and I just added the Blue Beats Green trailer because that is a great movie, and you can see our guest in action there in the trailer. So, Mr. Stewart, how have you been since the last time we talked to you?
Well, I'm just cooking right along. Hope you folks are doing well.
Well, you know what? We have been, I've been just using the heck out of your mouth-to-mouth resuscitation CO2 poisonous gas deal there. And you know what? That is a showstopper. That just cuts them right off at the knees. It's awesome.
That's correct. I'm telling you, there's not a single example of carbon dioxide being a pollutant. They cannot come up with one. They never have been able to come up with it. And you guys were talking about China there. China is clearly the number one, emitter of carbon dioxide. So I just wanted to throw that in.
Oh, and it's going to
blow
up. You
were right on track on that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Bill gets another high five. So, hey, for the folks who haven't heard you before, because now we're also airing in Philadelphia, so they are our new friends across the country, They may not take the time to go back and listen to old shows. So give them that mouth-to-mouth resuscitation example so they, too, can cut people off at the knees.
Well, I'll tell you what. When you look at everything that carbon dioxide does, you've got two big impacts. One is on the plant and animal kingdom, and the other one is a small impact that is on Earth's climate. And all you have to do that is do what old Winston Churchill said. He said, the farther backward you look, the farther forward you're likely to see. And I love that comment because I'm a geologist by background. That's the way we were taught to study the Earth and see what has happened in Earth's past to be able to understand why it's like it is today, why the earthquakes are where they are, you know, where we should expect volcanic activity and all of that kind of stuff. And all that works real well. And all that really helps you kind of look forward and say, well, what's likely to happen, you know, in the next year, the next millennia on Earth, because this is what has happened over and over again in the past. That gets back to climate science here, because nothing is happening now that's different than it has been in the past. That's what all the global statistics show. despite what they say. They say, oh, we're having more extreme weather events. The international statistics do not, and I emphasize, do not bear that out. Somebody just said that, and they all picked up on it, and they've run with it, and they're making everybody think that every storm, every drought we have, da-da-da-da-da, is something really unusual. Well, California's having a problem with droughts. There's no question about that. But if you look back at about the year, let's say 800 A.D., when the Mayans all of a sudden disintegrated in mid-America down there, that drought lasted over 100 years.
Oh,
and it
lovely.
Totally changed the civilization. Now, I'm not wishing that on California.
Well, obviously, they weren't.
But just
ahead
to
of the...
put it in perspective,
sure.
Earth is, I mean, we're not seeing anything today that is different or unusual from what has happened in Earth's past.
Well, they should have stayed on top of their CO2 emissions back then, and maybe that wouldn't have happened. And, you know, we all know that they were spot on with the whole December 21st, 2012 prediction. So, I don't know.
Oh, weren't they?
Yeah, hashtag buy an epic fail.
Amen. I know it. This would all be laughable if it wasn't so serious.
Oh, it's just so irritating. I mean, you know, and to top it off, the only good thing about Earth Day this year is that the VA will be on the hot seat. So Earth Day just bugs the.
You know, I learned something about Earth Day.
Let's talk about the folks that are, you know, get excited on Earth Day. I mean,
I have a
strong environmental background myself, and actually, I started out on the other side of this. CO2's causing climate change issue, and started to write a book about that when I heard that the CO2 levels on Earth used to be 7,000 parts per million about 500 years ago, and then 5,000 parts per million, and then even as much as a couple of thousand parts per million as recently as the Cretaceous 100 million years ago, et cetera. And I thought, boy, it must have had a humongous
impact. Well, everything died.
And then
didn't everything die when it was that high? I mean, the plants and everything must have just croaked.
No. Nothing died. That's when a whole lot of things came into being. In fact, I put a chart together to show what had happened when Earth's plants showed up. The paleontologists have dug all of these things, of course, out of our rocks and sediments and everything. The first land plants on Earth came in about 430 million years ago. Well, the CO2 level was over 4,000 parts per million then. That helped the plants probably come in because, as you recall, we all learned in the third grade that CO2 is what plants eat. Well, the more that you put in the atmosphere, the more they have to eat, and the better they grow. So when you look at that chart, you see that we've come from 7,000, 4,000, 2,000 parts per million down to what we're breathing today, which is only 400 parts per million today. And nearly all of our plants evolved on Earth when CO2 levels were way higher than they are today. And I think that may be one reason that they're responding so well to the additional CO2 that we are putting in the atmosphere now since the Industrial Revolution. It's something that the world's agricultural community, because of them being commercially involved and a lot of the plants, trees, and food crops and things like that, they have done nearly 3,000 peer-reviewed studies. I emphasize peer-reviewed studies that show what happens when we give the plants, food crops, and trees more carbon dioxide. And to just summarize the essence of it in kind of one sentence here, the 8 most consumed food crops on Earth, if we let CO2 levels build up, say, another 300 parts per million, only 300 parts per million, would increase their growth by 39%.
That's wow.
What, that's what these experiments have shown. I'm not talking about model experiments. I'm talking about real experiments of having these chambers where they add carbon dioxide in.
Well, we have that video. We've brought it forward from a previous program that we did with you, the video that says seeing is believing. The one about the one with the little seedling, and they go from 450 parts per million, which is that's what's normal for us, right? Don't we live in about 400 and something parts
per
million?
Correct. That's not a whole lot more.
But I don't know if you'd call that normal, though. I mean,
that's like regular if we're just walking around.
Yeah, today.
Well, the CO2 level at the time of the Industrial Revolution was 280 parts per million.
Wow.
And it's risen to 400 parts per million in 150 years. Now, during that 150 years, Earth has warmed. There's no question in my mind that Earth has warmed somewhat. Not a whole lot, but it has warmed. And that's what got everybody excited, particularly when this got so popular in the 80s and early 90s, because the CO2 level was going up steeply, which it still is. And the Earth's temperature was going up at a fairly, reasonable high pace. But when we look back, we see that the rate of Earth's temperature increase was just as high from 1910 to the 1940s. And, why did the temperature go up just as fast then as it has more recently in the 80s and 90s, if CO2 was what driving it? Let me add one more observation there. Earth has not just been warming recently since the Industrial Revolution. Earth has been warming since the year about 1715. That is 300 years ago. So I like to ask the people that I call the warmest alarmist, why did Earth warm for the first 150 years when carbon dioxide was not going up at all?
Yeah, what caused it back then?
What caused that first 150 years of warming?
Because that's a long time.
And they just give you a big blank look. They've got no answer for that.
We should make a movie about that. We could call it It's an Inconvenient
Truth.
Well,
it'd sure be better than the one that's out now called The Merchants of Doubt. I just saw that. That Naomi Oreskes put together. And she kept saying that the skeptics, which I guess I'll have to say that I've moved to the skeptic side of this, and she says that the skeptics are ignoring the science. Yet in the entire movie, she did not give any science examples that, something real, something empirical, is causing Earth to warm. All they have are these unvalidated climate models. And the modelers have no incentive to try to come in and prove, well, hey, it's not CO2, it's just Mother Nature and all of her 22 other natural factors that are driving the climate. Da 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 da. So it's a real pity the way this thing's going. What's happening, obviously, is that the media has picked up on these catastrophic model forecasts because they know we humans are suckers for catastrophes that are either unfolding today or might unfold tomorrow or next year or 10 years from now.
Leighton, we're gonna take a quick break here, but when we come back, I would like you to talk about what are truly the biggest factors and what are the biggest contributors to CO2 in our environment today. So with that,
we'll be here breathing in and out.
Yeah, I'll try to limit my breathing.
Way to go.
Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm going to take a deep breath and hold my breath.
Don't pant.
We'll be right back.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my damn.
You're listening to We the People on AM 1460 KCNR.
I am the God of hellfire.
CO2 alert.
CO2 alert. There's fire.
Danger, Will Robinson.
If we could have found a song that was called Forest Fire, that would have been awesome. Hey, you're listening to We the People Radio. We are being joined by Leighton Stewart. He's a geologist, environmentalist, author, and retired energy industry executive. And he's also just our super favorite fun guest on this whole thing about climate science.
Yes, absolutely.
Because it's just funnier when he says it. I don't know why.
Hey, Leighton, tell me, what are the biggest contributors to CO2 in our environment, and is it something we can just, like, control?
Well, as far as the contributors of carbon dioxide, it's humans. Because what we're doing is we're taking these fossil fuels that are in the ground and putting that carbon dioxide, when we burn them, we're putting that carbon dioxide back into the atmosphere from where it came. All of these source rocks, source shales, things like that, that took carbon dioxide out of the air as those plants and even the sea life that's in the oceans, et cetera, took it out of the atmosphere or out of the oceans and built their bodies with it, et cetera, and that all settled to the bottom and ultimately stacked up and stacked up and stacked up and finally turned into rocks, and some of it we see in the cliffs as we drive along the highway, in the outcrops. Anyway, that is now getting put back in the atmosphere as we burn some of these products. So there's no questions that since the Industrial Revolution, which, like I said before, was 280 parts per million in the atmosphere, to build it up to today's 400 parts per million, that is mostly human caused.
Well, how much?
The
is...
result has been spectacular in what it has done for the Earth. Earth is getting greener and greener and greener, and satellites are proving that because the plants, the trees, are growing like crazy despite all of the bad stuff we're doing, such as paving everything in sight with asphalt, concrete, putting buildings everywhere, and even clear-cutting some of the rainforest. Earth, net-net, as proven by the satellite, is getting greener. The true environmentalists are on the wrong side of this issue and do not even know it. I finally had to recognize when I started out on the other side, I said, hey, Leighton, you're on the wrong side of this thing. Carbon dioxide, net-net, is very beneficial to life on Earth.
And how much of an impact, you know, we all see the satellite images of forest fires and volcanoes and all this, where they just blanket the atmosphere with smoke. How big of an impact as compared to humans does that take into account?
Well, it does have some impact, but you've got to be careful about some of the stuff we're putting in the atmosphere because a lot of it puts things called aerosols, little bitty particles, in the atmosphere, and net-net aerosols actually cool the Earth because they give you some kind of, it's like having a smaller amount of cloud up there.
Is that human caused or is that natural?
No, some of that would be human caused. Obviously, the forest fires are mostly natural. They're mostly caused by lightning strikes, which, again, is Mother Nature. But that's been going on forever.
And anyway, what about volcanoes?
Volcanoes put aerosols in the atmosphere and cool the Earth, clearly cool the Earth. Mount Pinatubo back in 92, I believe it was, clearly caused a cooling of the Earth. As you look farther back at some of the big ones like Krakatoa and so forth, it cooled the Earth for a couple of years. It put so many particles in the atmosphere, and the water vapor in the atmosphere nucleated around these little particles, caused it to get a lot cloudier. When these low-level clouds are there, the sun shines down on the top of those clouds, which, by the way, are very white on top and a lot of times dark on the bottom. But it just reflects the sun's energy back into space, and Earth doesn't really warm. All you have to do is walk outside without a hat, sun shining on you, it's hotter than blue blazes, cloud comes over, and it gets very comfortable.
So
it's
if we
because
had,
that heat is reflected back
right.
into space.
So if we had a big volcano, would that kind of put the whole global warming thing kind of on its heels for a while?
It would, but it depends on how big it is as to how long that would happen. I mean, if we had one of these huge eruptions, like if Yellowstone Park went off again, like it did 640,000 years ago when it created a big caldera there that's 45 miles long and 30 miles wide.
Right, right.
That that would be a real catastrophe because Earth would really cool for some period of time.
What impact did, say, a volcano eruption the size of Mount St. Helens, on a global scale, that probably wasn't much.
No,
was it?
It didn't cause much on a global scale.
Okay.
That was mainly the side of the mountain that kind of decided to slide off as more and more pressure built up inside that mountain. And so we didn't get all of that much earth cooling out of Mount St. Helens. It was a relatively small, big eruption, I guess you'd call it.
From a human standpoint, it looked pretty big, but from a global standpoint, it was
from a global standpoint, it was not all that big.
A blip
certainly
on the radar, as they say.
But the main thing I'd like to stress here is, in looking at these two impacts of CO2, because so many of our true environmentalists have been so grossly misled on what carbon dioxide is doing to the Earth, I'd like to beg them to look at the real data and see what is happening as we put more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. It is a real help to our ecosystems, habitats, as I said earlier, plants, food crops, forest, all of that has been documented. It is clearly a positive there. And if you're a conservationist, if you're an environmentalist, and look at the real statistics on that, and put in the back of your mind that somebody in the administration said CO2 is a pollutant when there is absolutely not a single example. Go ask any college professor, high school professor of chemistry, to give you an example. In 8.5 years of giving talks on this, I've never had one rise to that challenge. They cannot come up with a single example. Carbon dioxide is the gas of life. It's just a fact. So these true environmentalists have been so grossly misled that they think that is pollutant going up. I laughed when I saw this movie, Merchants of Doubt. All they showed at the front end and back end was all of this stuff belching out of these, smokestacks and everything. Carbon dioxide is colorless, odorless, and tasteless. You cannot see carbon dioxide. So that is totally misleading that all of that stuff you see coming out of these stacks is CO2. Now, is there some CO2 coming out? Yeah, probably so. If it's something that's being burned in there, whatever's being burned, part of it's probably turned into CO2. But it's certainly not what you see coming out of those stacks.
Wow. It just keeps going, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
So
it just
irritating.
It just wears you out.
It but does,
anyway,
too, because they're not
kidding
anymore.
Tell environmentalists to just remember what they learned in the third grade. CO2 is what plants eat. Tell them there are thousands of peer-reviewed studies they should go look at and find out what CO2 is doing for the plant and animal kingdom.
We will, and I have. Non-nerdy science, you know, they give you all these details, and it's like, you know what? I can't go toe to toe with them on that. But
let's get back to basics.
But I can deal with, you know, real simple things like, like your mouth to mouth resuscitation example. You know, if you're breathing, what is it, 40,000 parts per million, into yes. some, and it was a pollutant, you would have killed them every time, and we didn't.
No, that's right. No, there are several really good examples on that, and you're mentioning a good one. If somebody, you know, had a heart attack and you were going to give them mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, you would be breathing out of your lungs and into theirs to save their life, what you said, 40,000 parts per million. We're only breathing 400. The government statistics show CO2 is not a pollutant. In our nuclear submarines, where the submariners stay underwater for, you know, 3 or 4 months at a time, they allow the CO2 level to build up to 8,000 parts per million, 8,000 in those submarines before they decide they need to kick in a little more oxygen. Da 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 da. NASA, when NASA sends somebody to Mars and back, they think that's probably about a 3-mile round trip. They're going to let those capsules contain 5,000 parts per million.
And here that's a good one.
Breathing 400, and they're acting like, oh my gosh, if it goes to 450 or 500, it's just going to pollute us all.
So bottom line is, if we put astronauts in the capsule with 5,000 parts per million, bottom line is we would have killed them before they got off the launch pad.
I'll tell you one thing, they better take a lawnmower with them because the boss is going to get sick in
it.
There.
Think it is
a lawnmower, I love it. Take that's a good.
And a weed eater. Oh my gosh. All right, we're going to be right back. We've got to take a quick break. We're talking to Leighton Steward. We always have such a good time with you. You're on We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back. Classic.
That was something Stevie Wonder did back in the late 70s.
Secret Life of Plants, huh?
That was the name of the album.
Huh. Where was that when we needed it earlier?
Oh, my.
So Leighton, we've got a question in the chat room here. Somebody's asking about the idea of solar radiation management or what they're calling...
A.K.A.
Or what they're calling geoengineering. Where are you on that whole thing?
Well, I think we better be real careful when they start tampering with that because, you know, we've had in the last 800,000 years, we've had 8 ice ages and 8 interglacials like we're in right now. We're in an interglacial period that's been going on for at least 10,000 years right now, and we're very fortunate to be there because the glacial periods usually last 85 or 90,000 years, and the interglacials average a little over 10,000 years. Some of them longer, some of them shorter. Let's hope ours is longer because we've been at this about 10,000 years. So to put that in perspective, we don't want to go up and put a lot of stuff in the atmosphere that's going to reflect the sunlight back into space before it ever reaches the Earth and watch Earth all of a sudden start cooling, because when Earth starts cooling, the plants don't grow as well in cold. And boy, we could cut the food supply on Earth overnight and just starve hundreds of millions more people, because we already have probably 1.3 billion people on the edge of starvation right now, that, you know, worldwide, and some of the statistics I've seen. So we've got to be real careful about that geoengineering. Can we do small-scale geoengineering? We might be able to do that. But the bottom line is, I don't think we have to, and let me bring in the cavalry on this. I was invited about 3 years ago to give a talk here in the hill country northwest of San Antonio to a bunch of retired NASA scientists and some astronauts, and gave them a lot about what I'm talking to you about. Now, when it was over with, I found out they were already concerned about what they were hearing coming out of NASA and the administration today. They said, you know, NASA's making some comments like this man-made climate change is really a problem, but they're not showing us any data to back that up. Said, back when we were putting people on the moon, we had a big sign on the wall that said, "In God we trust, all others bring data."
And so, I love that one.
Yeah, so they were really concerned about that. Anyway, after it was over with, they invited me to go to the Space Center in Houston. I gave the same talk to a whole lot more of the NASA alumni. These are people that aren't beholden to the administration anymore. They're retired. So they don't have to worry about what they say. They can say what they see and not worry about repercussions. Anyway, they put together a team, and that team is called The Right Climate Stuff. They've been at it 3 years now, and let me tell you who these people are real quickly. They're chemists, they're physicists, astrophysicists, geophysicists, mathematicians, meteorologists, geologists, etc. A lot of them PhDs. There's 25, maybe as many as 30 of them that are on that team. What they have decided after 3 years, and what's on their website, which is therightclimatestuff.com, are these conclusions. The science of the major cause of climate change is not settled. Natural processes, which would be Mother Nature, dominate climate change. Man-made CO2 impact appears to be muted or very little. Real empirical evidence does not support catastrophic warming in the future. The government is overreacting to concerns about man-made warming. These catastrophic forecasts are coming from these unvalidated climate models. They've looked at that real hard. Those models aren't worth blah. They've never projected anything yet that's been right. The climate models contain assumptions of Earth's sensitivity to CO2 that are far too high. Earth's sensitivity is measured by, if we double CO2, how much would it warm the Earth? And all these models have that sensitivity too high, they say, by a factor of about 3. Here's one that had been bugging me. That the EPA and administration call CO2 a pollutant is scientifically embarrassing. And when they go back and just make a simple model based on real temperature and CO2 relationships since the Industrial Revolution 163 or 4 years ago, they say that the maximum rise in temperature projects at only about 1.2 degrees Celsius by the end of this century. That's not going to overheat anything. In fact, it'll make the plants grow a little bit better if the Earth gets a little bit warmer. So this is from a bunch of people that are putting their reputations on the line. They have impeccable reputations. Whether it's 80 years from now, 8,000, 80,000 years from now, this will be the team of scientists that they will look back and say, this is the first group of scientists that put humans on another heavenly body and brought them home. When we sent people to the moon and back. First time man had left Earth.
You're not buying into that, are you?
Come back, and they are risking the wrath of all of these people that are saying us, we skeptics, are crazy, blah, 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 blah. They're risking all of that because they say we're off base. CO2 is good. It's not causing any significant climate change. We can see that in the data. It is not.
So how do we, bottom line is, how do we, because it's become, it's, you know, yeah, there are the true believers out there who think, you know, we're all going to die because of CO2. But what's really picked up so much steam is all this idea of cap and trade and all that. It's the economic.
Oh, that's money, money, money.
Yeah, it's just a
follow
big...
the money. It's what the Russian poet Pushkin said maybe a couple hundred years ago, maybe 150, I don't know what it was. The Russian poet Pushkin said, where there is a trough, there will be pigs. And the government back in the early 90s started putting out all of this money for people to study not what's causing climate change, but only what man-made carbon dioxide is doing to cause Earth to get warmer. And so we're never, even if they said, well, CO2 is causing the Earth to get warmer, which it is a little bit, you'd never know, well, how much of the current warming is caused by that versus natural factors if you don't study the natural factors. But you've got a whole bunch of people feeding at that trough. You've got the administration itself, because they'd love to see a cap and trade and see all the tax dollars from all that stuff come across the desk. And Mr. President Obama wouldn't be any different than previous presidents. They all like a flow of dollars, because they can go figure out some way to buy votes. The green industries selling us green products are making money. The Wall Street brokers would make billions of dollars in carbon credit sales. Academia has been my biggest disappointment, because I know from having been on the board at Tulane and the largest college at SMU that we loved those professors that brought in the big grants. They got promoted faster. They got tenured faster if they brought a lot of money into the universities, because the universities get ranked to a big extent, not the only extent, by how many research dollars they bring in. In other words, there's not a top 25 university in the United States that's not bringing in at least $30 million of grants every year.
Wow.
So you can see, gets back to what Pushkin said, where there's a trough, there will be pigs. And the government and some of these private foundations are giving money to try to see what man is doing with his carbon dioxide to the atmosphere. Then you got the environmental extremists that get their money by scaring it out of your pocket. And lastly, of course, is the media that knows that we will all line up and listen to their station when they say, folks, we got a catastrophe unfolding, or one may unfold. So I think that's our problem, and it's mainly media-based as far as I'm concerned with the general public, because climate science is very complex. Plant science, and that's one reason I talk about plant science as much as I do, is plant science is a lot easier to understand than complex climate science.
Yeah, true. Yeah, regular people, you're right. We learned that in third grade. We need to take one more quick break, but just something point to ponder. Earth Day just happens to be on Lenin's birthday. I'm sure that was an accident.
Coincidence?
I don't think so. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Well, isn't that the truth of it? Hey, welcome back to We the People Radio. We're here with Leighton Steward, who is our favorite climate science guest. Yeah, sure, say that quickly. All right, so in our last, five-ish minutes or so, how are we going to turn this around?
Well, you've got to talk to the folks that are representing you in Washington. That's about the only way we're going to do it. Clearly, our president and the administration that he's leading up there right now, they want to get something in here and say that carbon dioxide's causing all the problem. We've got to stop energy use, et cetera. It's going to have a horrible impact, and and the impact it has is going to be worse on the poorer people of the country, because as we raise the utility costs, the transportation costs, the cost of food, et cetera, by going to these more expensive, unreliable alternative energies, it's going to cut them off at the knees because they don't have any extra optional dollars to spend on that. And even the previous Pope said that it would clearly, if we got in and tried to reduce carbon dioxide, it would hurt the poor the most. That's about all I know to do. I mean, I've done, 104 of these radio shows since January of last year, so I'm doing what I can and will continue to do it. And by the way, I'm not getting one penny for doing this. I'm working somewhat off and on with this NASA bunch, which I really like because it's a bunch of really bright people. They're not getting paid a penny for what they're doing either. So if you want an objective bunch of first-class scientists, go and look at their website and see what they're coming out with. It's horribly frustrating because the media does not have any incentive to put out the good news about carbon dioxide. They say, well, you know this better than I do. Bad news sells and good news doesn't sell.
So yeah.
I'm afraid it's about that simple. So the only way we're going to turn around what's going on in Washington is to vote folks in there that are going to stop the administration from having the United States use the most expensive energy in the world while we give them our leftover oil, gas, coal, whatever, so they'll rest of the world will have the cheapest energy. Because if we do that, if that's not economic suicide, I don't know what it is.
See, that's the kicker, is that all of this is it's a control mechanism. You know,
it is.
We've got to, in order to help everybody, which is, I think, why Earth Day on Lenin's birthday is so, you know, perfect. And I'm sure that's not a coincidence. But, you know, the whole message is, in order to save the planet, we've got to give up everything and pool our resources and live in a hut. And, you know, and that's how we're going to survive. It's all the politics of scarcity.
Right.
Bob's got two bits for us. What do you got, Bob?
Actually, courtesy of Charles, who called in during the last break, wanted to point out that Earth Day also coincides with Hitler's birthday.
Get out! Really?
Hitler, who had his own environmental agenda, as you may recall.
Whoa. Oh, we said Hitler and we didn't ring the bell. Ding! I guess it's only when we say Nazis. But that's okay. Hitler and Nazis, they're all the same. Hey, thanks, Charles. Okay, so Hitler and Lenin are leading the way on Earth Day. So for all those people that are thinking about, you know, I throw all my recyclables away on Earth Day. I usually litter. It just frustrates me because it's a manipulation.
Well, there are a lot of, I'm nearly always on the other side of these environmental issues. In fact, I may be the only guy in my industry that ever got an unsolicited Environmental Excellence Award from the Environmental Protection Agency. I was chairman of the National Wetlands Coalition for about 10 years, and also the company I was running spent a lot of volunteer efforts in trying to save the wetlands of the lower Mississippi River Delta, et cetera. So I've really been an environmentalist all my life, but in this case, we were wrong to condemn carbon dioxide. Remember that. Tell people when they come and make some ridiculous statement to you, said, go look at the data. Look at it. Don't just give me a bunch of cliches that somebody stuck in one of their op-ed columns or something. Da-da-da-da-da. And anyway, as people say, the truth will out. Unfortunately, it may be two or three more decades of the Earth not getting warm before some of these people turn around. I don't know, but all we can do is try. And
exactly.
It's people like you that let some of us get on the air and put some facts out in front of people and hope that they say, well, you know, I guess I never really looked at the data. to see what it's really showing. So yeah, keep it up, folks.
I don't think they think about it. You know, sometimes I think out of sight, out of mind in a way. Well, got like a half a minute left, but thank you so much for coming on with us. And if you get any new projects or, I don't know, you come up with any other snappy things. I like the astronaut deal. What is it? What's the parts per million? 5,000 in the capsule?
Excuse me. The astronaut deal on the way to Mars and back is 5,000 parts per million for 3 years.
They better brush their teeth, because man, they're going to have some. They're going to have some green growing on their teeth.
And they're calling CO2 a pollutant.
Yeah, that's great. You know, I can up my game. I can go back to the original people and frustrate them further.
They can raise some big corn crops on that on that spaceship on the way.
It's one way. We'll never know if it worked. Thank you so much. Have a great...
thank you, folks. I appreciate it.
Have a great weekend. Mm-hmm. You've been listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll have all that info on the VA hearing for you. And have a great week. Bob?
You're listening to KCNR Shasta Redding.